Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Workforce 4.0. I'm so excited to have our guest this week with us today, Ashley Walters. Ashley has been an amazing and inspiring female leader in the manufacturing industry. You've probably seen her posts on LinkedIn or seen her company, Onyx Manufacturing, on LinkedIn. She's also authored a book called Grit and Grace, and we're going to get more into that today as well. But Ashley, I'm super excited to have you with us here today. And for those that may be listening that aren't as familiar with your work, can you give us just a brief introduction of yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I always tell people my manufacturing career like really kicked off when I was 13 years old with one plant to work, and manufacturing has been like in my blood ever since. So while I'm no longer operating a manufacturer anymore, I help all sorts of manufacturers with their businesses. And that has been like just a really awesome part to see others continue to change and grow and adapt.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to get more into the book. And so I did share that with everyone, some of the cool tidbits that you've learned. But before we get into the real meaning of why we're here today, can you tell me what is your favorite karaoke song or song?
Oh, great question. I think one that I love to play on repeat is called Half of My Hometown by Kelsey Ballerini and Kenny Chesney. And it just really speaks to what we're like, where we are in East Tennessee. They are from like the Knoxville area, both of them. And just that it's fall, so we're almost to football season and all the good things there too. So yeah, that one's definitely on repeat right now.
Oh my gosh, I love that one. That's a good one. I like that one a lot. You're right. Sometimes you got to keep going, right? That's what I always say, at least. But I was reading your book and I realized that you were actually a degree chemical engineer, which is rad, by the way, in that you went to Auburn University, War Eagle. And that's really cool because I'm in Alabama now, and football is a real big part of living in Alabama. And you're either a Roll Tide fan or you're a War Eagle fan. So that's really cool to share that part of your journey as well.
I had somebody tell me once, I'm never like second grade and moved to the state of Alabama, and a little girl in his second grade class said, are you an Alabama fan or an Auburn fan? And he was like, I don't know. He was like, Alabama, because he was just choosing the state and didn't realize that his parents were Auburn alum. So he caught quite a bit of grief for that choice.
I bet so. And I know that we had a chance to talk a little bit more before the recording today that you did go to Auburn, and I know I shared a bunch of my family that is also going to Auburn. It's like such a big part of Southern culture. And that kind of leads me into the title of your book, which as a Southerner, I really appreciate. But it's called Leading with Grit and Grace. It's a journey about organizational control change. And in your introduction, you talk about what it means to lead with grit and what it means to lead with grace. And this is something that I think that if you're Southern, you hear the term come out a lot. It's give grace. It's grace with yourself, have grace with others. And I just love the title of this. And in that introduction, when you explain what that is, what grace looks like and what grace is, I love that so much. Can you share a little bit more about that?
In manufacturing, we definitely get grit, right? It's like hard work and determination and resilience and persistence is that's how I define it. But that grace piece, we haven't always been so good at. That's really that empathy and compassion for others. I would say we've gotten a lot better at it, right? As we've new generations enter the workforce. And we've gotten away from that command and control style that since the Industrial Revolution, right, has been in the way of leadership and manufacturing. And now our leaders are having to learn new skills. They're having to learn those soft skills and really make more people-centric cultures within their manufacturing facilities just by the nature of what the new workforce is demanding of us. That grace piece is definitely maybe a learned behavior and a change for manufacturing for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you were kind of coming up with the concept of writing this book, was that really your leading inspiration behind the whole concept?
A couple of things happened. One was I went to Women in Manufacturing. They worked with Case Western Reserve University up in Cleveland, Ohio, and they did a leadership cohort. And so as a part of that, I had to write down 27 things I wanted to do before I died. And one was like, write a book. And of course, that's like a pipe dream, right? But I wrote it down on the list nonetheless. In 2020, we're in the midst of the pandemic, and my marketing coordinator said to me, she said, Ashley, you need to write a book. She said, you need to share your journey with others. And I said, I don't write. I'm an engineer. We don't write.
I don't know. I feel like documentation is a really big part of the engineering job description.
No, but it's like more technical writing. It's not, we're not known for telling a story, right? Anyway, I was like, fine, I'll write it. So started in September of 2020 and self-published it in December of 2020. And I just had no idea the process that there was for writing a book. Otherwise, I would not have given myself such a tight timeline. Ultimately, the reason I did it was just because I thought if one person hears the story and it helps them, then it was all worth it. And what happened was I've gotten to speak to people all across the world, had people reach out and just say how whichever portion of the book has impacted their life or resonated with them. And now they know that they're not alone. Their problems aren't as unique as they feel. So a lot of leaders, and it's so funny what resonates with somebody in the book. It's always different. And I think it's just about like where you are in your journey is what speaks to you at that moment. But it's been really cool to meet all the people that I've met that I would have never met if I hadn't written a book.
That's true. You talk about so many different things in different parts of the book. You talk about leading with the grace, and you talk about empowering your workforce. You're talking about succession planning, which is something that I'll get into here shortly. But it's really great. It's a great aid for someone looking to get a concept of how to go through the process of organizational change. So super excited to share that. And you've got all of this OpEx experience as a manufacturing and previous manufacturing owner. What was it like running the organization at large and then eventually making that transition? And then did you rely on technology at all as a key part of that transition?
Yeah, so Onyx wasn't a manufacturer of widgets, like you think, like true manufacturing production. We were more job shop, or are more job shop. Things are more custom. So it's hard to implement any true automation. However, we do spend a lot of time talking about engineering, like safety issues out of our work processes. So that really means new equipment. So we're going away from being so hands-on, heavy lifting. We're thinking about ergonomics. We're thinking about like hearing protection and all those things. So what equipment can we put into place to help get the work done in a safer, more efficient manner without truly breaking somebody's back, right? Not so much automation, but definitely on the equipment side.
And that process was predominantly fabrication, I'm assuming.
So part of it is fabrication, but part of it is also like the pouring of precast shapes. So I think mixing concrete, bringing the mold, having to demold and then
move those parts.
Yeah, that's it.
Gotcha. So even like cranes, things like that, you could probably buy because like a big overhead crane, or there's just different types of things that you can do. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a lasting impact back from your workforce in this regard?
When you go to your workforce and ask them, what is it that you're doing that you don't like, right? Or what is taking up a lot of your time? They're the perfect source to help you figure out and get their buy-in on the equipment too, right? Like, you can need this cream, but you didn't think, you don't know how they are working or what they're doing with it. You don't understand like the day to day. So getting them to help pick whatever it is that you're going to implement, that way they'll use it. You could buy something that is useless without knowing or meaning to.
Definitely. And you want to have their input as well, because they're the ones using it, but also it gives them a sense of empowerment. And I was just having this conversation the other day, but a lot of places that employees work, you know, they have to buy their own tools, and that's like a huge loss for the employee. So anytime that you can step in and implement some things like that, and with purpose for your workforce, I think it's just such a huge advantage as an employer.
Yeah, for sure. The empowerment piece is really what you're hunting for too. Like, you're dead on with that. When you're asking for somebody's opinion, it really makes them feel valued as they are and empowered to help you make other good decisions.
And you talk a lot about that in the book. And you also talk about the importance of marketing, which I think is just such a big deal for a lot of smaller manufacturing companies out there, because they have never really had a marketing department. And I think we're moving through the world where marketing is going to be such a bigger deal, because it's just, there's not a good centralized form of communication like job ads. So when's like the last time, for example, that you went and you looked at the paper for a job ad? For all the kids out there listening, you know, we used to do that in time. We used to check the Sunday classifieds every week in the Sunday paper for job ads.
Yeah, the marketing is a huge one. I run a peer group, an executive peer group, for the University of Tennessee, and it's all manufacturers, and I have them start out with a business health assessment, just self-rating themselves. I want to see where they are. I want to know what kind of programming to bring in for them over the course of the year that helps them in areas where they're more deficient. And marketing is absolutely the top one, where we see, like you said, they've had these customers forever. They haven't needed to market, and now all of a sudden the landscape has really changed, and they also aren't great at telling their own story. They don't realize just how cool what they're producing is. And so bringing that human element, talking about the people who are creating whatever we're manufacturing and really applying it to the world at large is a big way that manufacturing can improve on their own marketing.
Yeah, well, I've for sure seen your LinkedIn content. I think you're amazing for telling a story. What's your advice for companies that are interested in learning more on how to do that successfully?
Yeah, so I think that there's some like fantastic marketers out there that are influencers in the manufacturing space. I know that a lot of us think that we have to do it all in-house, but I think the biggest tip would be to go out there and find an individual, a group, a company that you can work with, that you really, how they portray your brand, making sure it's authentic, really getting that message out there. Because what I didn't know about marketing was how many different like specialties there are. When we hired a marketing coordinator, I just thought they could do website and social media and the press releases and like all the things. And then somebody educated me and was like, no, those are different. It's overwhelming. We generally don't have the skill sets, but that doesn't mean you can't share a resource with another manufacturer.
Exactly. And that's why I just love the community behind the manufacturing workforce, and what it kind of stands for is really sharing those resources. Marketing was a big part of the book, but then you have an entire chapter on succession planning. And as a solopreneur, as a small business owner, that kind of really hit home for me. But what I think is the most interesting takeaway is the concept of turning Onyx Manufacturing into an ESOP company. And to me, that is really fantastic that you did that. I kind of want to know a little bit more about that. And maybe you could share what that experience of transitioning into an ESOP company looks like to our listeners today.
I think just even starting with succession planning, think about it early is one of my biggest pieces of advice there. Because you have to grow like your leadership team And you as the owner have to think about, what does that exit look like for me? What does that strategy look like? And there's so many different ways to transition your business. So ESOP is one. ESOP is the one that we chose. And it resonated with us because we were a small to medium-sized manufacturer in a community that had lost a lot of manufacturers. And I felt like I didn't want there to be the chance that community would lose another manufacturer. If you sold a private equity, for instance, maybe you end up in part of a roll-up and they wouldn't keep that business open. So just wanted to make sure that those 50 employees, jobs were retained, those families were supported, the community was that they're in still got that support. What an ESOP means is it's an employee stock ownership plan, and it's governed by the Department of Labor. And what happens is whatever percentage of stock that the seller sells to become employee owned is no longer taxed from an income level at federal or state. For most states, I think there's maybe five that still tax. So that income, that tax savings from the income is how the seller is paid out. So a lot of people think that the employees have to buy in and purchase the stock. They do not. They never bring a dollar to the table. It's all paid for by those federal tax dollar savings. And what happens is Uncle Sam says, okay, I'm willing to wait on those tax dollars. He eventually gets paid when the employee retires. So it's a qualified retirement plan. And so the government does get those tax dollars back, but it's, you know, later on in the life cycle of the company as people retire. So it's a super creative way to succeed and transition for a seller.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love that you took that route for your employees, because it really, to me, it shows that you really care about their livelihoods and their long-term careers and then even post-career success. But I want to know from your perspective, instead of taking the PE route, right, what inspired you to take the ESOP route?
Yes, it just depends upon the seller and what they need, right? So if they're selling to a PE firm, maybe they need to exit a lot faster. So with an ESOP, it's meant to be an earnout. So it's meant to take 10 years, really, to earn the seller out. So if you didn't start thinking about it really early on, maybe if he's thinking about retirement more at 65, you probably don't have that 10-year horizon that you want to still be involved in the business and owner. So it's, once again, it's about the goals that the seller has for themselves. For us, ESOP just made a ton of sense because we had built that culture of problem solving and continuous improvement, and everybody was really bought into the business and already had a little bit of that ownership mindset. And so that just felt like a really good natural transition. But there's no right or wrong way. It just, that was the way that felt best for us.
That's awesome. I have to know too, have you seen any examples from that decision that indicate company growth, or is it leveraged? Is the ESOP leveraged as a recruiting tool, and has it impacted your retention rates?
Yeah, for sure. So I think there's definitely an aspect that when you're talking to a potential new employee and telling them that they have ownership in the company and that truly every decision that they make every single day impacts their ownership, that definitely plays a big part into the hiring process. And then retention too, right? If they leave, they're giving up that stock and they'll get paid out for whatever like today's value is, but they won't be able to retain it for retirement. So it's not like the normal stock market where you can leave it in forever. If you leave the company, you have to give the shares back. So right. Yeah, from a retention standpoint as well. But I think the biggest thing is just that company culture piece. Everybody, that mindset of being an owner and every decision that you make and how it impacts really your bottom line. It's your retirement account, making those good decisions, bringing problems up before they, little problems before they become big problems. It's just, it's not one big like initiative, but it's all those little things added up that just make such a big change in the company.
See, I agree with that. And I hear absolutely everything in recruiting. You hear all kinds of things. It never ceases to amaze me what I hear, but one of the biggest complaints that I hear about candidates applying for jobs in the manufacturing company is not only the culture, but just the frontline workforce and the way that we treat the frontline workforce and not having any decision-making capabilities or autonomy in their working life. And I think that's a great strategy to lead into that cultural change and really empower and impact your workforce in a meaningful way.
The frontline workforce, to the part that you saw, you have to be at the company, work 1,000 hours in a year, and be there on the last day of the year. And so, as many know, frontline is a lot of places where the retention is the hardest. And by being a part of that ESOP, it really, they know they're working for something that's bigger and more than just that paycheck. And so that really has helped retention on the front line. And I'm sure that they're proud of that. Oh, yeah. I tell everybody that's ESOP. I sit on 5 boards of other companies that are ESOP. And I tell the employees, I'm like, not everybody gets to go home and sit at the dinner table and be like, hey, I'm stuck in my company. Very few get to say that. And you should be really proud of that. So especially as these ESOPs start out, like the value, their share value isn't that much because they're highly leveraged or trying to pay off the seller or the bank or whoever. But I'm like, once you get that mortgage on the building paid off, just like a house or whatever, once you get that mortgage on the business paid off, your value is just so high and you're continuing to grow the business, continuing to make improvements. And it's all impacting you. You're just leaving.
I just love that story so much. And I just think that that is a true testament to your leadership. And I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but this is good stuff. This is what it's all about for the frontline workforce and the better part of the manufacturing workforce ecosystem.
No, that's okay. Now the leadership team at Onyx is fantastic. We all had to grow as leaders. Every year we have some leadership initiative, some place that we find that we're a little deficient and we want to learn and get better and grow. And that's a lot of times in manufacturing, take like the head salesperson and make them the sales manager, and there's no leadership. There's no management skills or training. We just promoted the best person, the best individual contributor sometimes to lead people. So I think building that team behind you, our guys at Onyx, they were telling us about meetings that they have now. So Drew and I have been out of the business for 1.5 years, but we're still behind the scenes anytime they need us. But they will have meetings and they'll sit in the conference room and they'll have a what would Ashley and Drew do meeting. Well, that's fun because I think as a leader, one of the things I learned was you have to have consistent behavior. It's just like being a parent, right? The more consistent you are, the more people trust you because they know the reaction. They can guess the reaction from whatever issue it is. And so the fact that they can have what would Ashley and Drew do meetings and guess what our reaction is going to be says a lot about the leadership. So now hopefully their behavior is also just as consistent for their team.
I love that. That's cool. Do you ever drop in on those or no?
No, we don't. We're here, obviously, behind the scenes and fully supportive. But what you can't do either as an owner who is like transitioned is go back and kind of mess with what they have going on. My father-in-law used to come in and he wouldn't mean to be disruptive, but people would like see him as their leader still, and what used to be isn't what is today. So to trust that next generation to lead, they're not going to do it your way, and that's okay.
They're not always going to do it your way, and that's okay. And that's certainly very impactful advice. Thank you for that. You also talk a lot about continuous improvement and changing throughout the book. That's another big theme in there. And I want to get on the rooftops and shout that with you. We have to change, right? Change is necessary. It's a big part of evolving as the industry. I don't know, from your point of view, how are we changing manufacturing culture for the better?
A lot of it is surrounding the people. right? We're doing a much better job of listening. My dad could tell me when he worked in the paper mill, like, that the managers would come by and they would ask his opinion, but then they wouldn't even listen to the answer. And they certainly would never take that opinion if they did ask at all. So his biggest advice to me was go to the plant floor, ask the people doing the work. They're the closest to the work. They already have the solution to the problem you're trying to solve. And I use that my entire career. I go to the person who's closest to the work and supply my observation and ask lots of curious questions. And they're happy to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of serving as the SME in this case. Like, if you're an engineer, you go to the SME. I mean, you go to the horse's mouth, right? You go to straight to the source. And that's kind of the way that you've got to look at that. And that's just kind of the process that we've got to take in making those changes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. Who do you think in the industry is really stepping up and taking charge and leading that change? Is there any company specifically, or is there any leader that you look up to? Who's doing the best at that and why?
Gosh, I can't think of anybody like specifically. I'll tell you though, the leaders I love the most are the ones that are willing to change and willing to learn. So for instance, that UT peer group I was telling you about before, like, I've got people in all different industries that the leaders know that they have to change, that they have to adapt, that they have to be more agile with it. And they're willing to spend the time working on the business and not always in the business. And I think that is big, because a lot of manufacturers, everything feels urgent and important all the time. But when you're in it all the time and you're not stepping back and going to find those resources, seeking those other ideas, strategizing for the future, when you're not working on the business, I think that's when you see real issues. So I would encourage all these leaders to get outside the walls. It's going to be okay. They're going to be all right. They can make it without you for half a day. And if they can't, then we've got bigger issues.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Get out there and find out what others are doing that has been successful. And more importantly, what somebody tried that was unsuccessful. Listen to those stories too, so you don't make the same. So for instance, like the speaker that I brought in last week when we launched the second cohort of that peer group was Coach Brian Lentz from the University of Tennessee's men's basketball team. And I had him talk about recruitment and retention as it applies to college sport. And we learned a ton from him that we could apply in manufacturing.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's so true, right? I think even Saban spoke at an industry conference event back in the spring, because somebody had sent me a clip of him from that conference. But basically, he was talking about how to recruit, like what strategies worked for when he was at Alabama and recruiting for players. So applying those strategies and ideas from outside the industry is always something that I'm also trying to tell people. Like, folks, if you look at the tech industry, for example, we could really borrow some of those things and apply it to this industry. And I think that's really a power of testament to the idea of adaptability and flexibility as well. But I love this conversation. I could go on and on and on today. For those that are listening out there, what is a good point of contact for you? And how can we get a hold of this awesome book?
Yeah. So LinkedIn is absolutely the easiest way to get me. Just connect, send a message. I would love to hear from everybody. Feel free to throw, if you're having a problem or an issue or challenge or something, like, send me a message. I'll be happy to share my experience. And then as far as the book, you can get it on Amazon. I think the coolest thing about the book is that when you place your order, it is printed specifically for you. And if you look at the very last page, it'll tell you the date and the city and state it was printed in. So they're all pretty unique.
That's awesome. I love that so much. Thank you so much, Ashley. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. And for everyone else listening, thank you so much. If you have a minute, please drop me a review for the podcast. I'd love to hear from you and learn more about you as well. Meantime, we'll see you next time on Workforce 4.0.
Thank you. Thanks.